Oh. This is John Ivey from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the June issue of Boys Life magazine. And our first article today is entitled, Tackling 14-14ers. It begins, a 12-year-old scout tells about his mountain climbing adventures. I have climbed three of the world's highest peaks, Cerro Aconcagua, South America's tallest mountain, 22,841 feet, Europe's Mount Elbrus, 18,510 feet, and Mount Kilimanjaro in Africa, 19,341. But my latest accomplishment was a labor of love. I climbed 14 of Colorado's famous 14,000-foot-plus mountains, 14ers, to help my friend Ian Lane Hess. My climbing team was different from day to day, but my dad, Mike, and Lane's dad and sister Olivia were always there. My twin sister Kaylee climbed 10 of the 14, and a few others also came on some climbs. Here are highlights from my 14-14ers adventure. May 2009. After becoming the youngest person to summit Aconcagua, December 2008, I got a lot of attention. But my dad told me that heroes are people who will help others. So I have decided to climb for my friend Lane. He has a lung disease that makes it hard for him to breathe, just like it's hard for me to breathe at the top of a mountain. I want to raise money to help Lane's family pay his medical bills. And I want people to learn about his disease, pulmonary hypertension. So I'm going to climb 14-14ers in 14 days for Lane. Mom and Dad are helping me set up a website, www.climb7.com, for donations. July 10th, Gray's Peak, Gentori's Peak, 6 miles, 3,950 vertical feet. Day 1. A lot of people showed up to climb today because they heard what I was doing. The climbing was pretty easy, but there were a couple times that I got really, really tired. But I thought of Lane and why I'm doing this and kept going. July 11th. Mount Democrat, Mount Lincoln, Mount Bros. 7.4 miles, 3,540 vertical. Olivia almost got electrocuted today. She was holding a fishing pole and all of a sudden shouted, "Ow! It's zapping me!" Dad said that meant lightning was about to strike. We quickly and safely evacuated the field. We were camping near a glacial river, but it was scary. Lightning kills people on these mountains every year. July 13th, Mount Tabuguachi and Mount Shivano, 9 miles, 5,293 vertical. We got lost on our way back to camp tonight, all because we tried to take a shortcut. Good thing I learned how to use a compass at scout camp this summer. We spent 4 extra hours on the mountain and had to dodge a thunderstorm, so much for the shortcuts. July 14th, Mount Antero, 4.5 miles, 3,419 vertical. Dad says Mount Antero used to be a beautiful mountain, but it has been opened up for mining of aquamarine, a precious gem. So lots of four-wheelers, all-terrain vehicles, and trucks. The summit was great, though. 1,000 feet of pristine mountain. July 15th, Mount Belford, Mount Missouri, Mount Oxford. 15.5 miles, 7,000, 4,000 vertical. What a day! Rain, sun, snow. We had it all. We were on our way down from Mount Missouri when dark clouds started moving in. So we put on all our rain gear. Took 3 steps, and the sun came out. Took off all our rain gear and started up Belford, and it started snowing. More clouds started rolling in, so we had to hurry to make the peak. I'm beat. July 17th, Mount Elbert, 8.5 miles, 4,373 vertical. Yesterday was a rest day, which was great, except I forgot to put on sunscreen. Wearing a backpack over the sunburn is not fun. Other than that, I feel great. There were tons of people on the mountain today. We kept trying to pass groups on our way to the summit and ended up making 4,300 vertical feet in less than 4 hours. Not bad. Bonus, some of the people donated money for Lane. July 18th, Mount Bierstadt in Mount Evans, 12 miles, 2,714 vertical. Boy, I'm dirty. I fell down trying to jump over and mud puddled, and my right shoe got stuck. By the time we emerged from the willow trees, my legs were caked in mud, and I was covered in scratches. I don't care, though. My goal was to climb 14 inches in 14 days, and we did it in 8. We also raised almost $20,000 to help Lane and others with pulmonary hypertension. I'm happy to be done, but I'm even happier that I helped Lane. And here we see a nice picture of Matt as he stands on Mount Missouri, reflecting on what turned out to be his longest and most difficult day. Let's find out a little bit about Matt Moniz. Matt Moniz file. He was born February 13, 1998. His hometown, Boulder, Colorado. His scout rank, Star Troop 171 in Boulder. His height is 5 feet 1 inch. He weighs 86 pounds. He started climbing at age 9 at base camp at Mount Everest, the tallest mountain on Earth. Matt tagged along with his dad, an avid climber, joined friends there. "I was hooked," Matt says. Now get outside. Matt is an ambassador for Outdoor Nation, an online community of people who love the outdoors. Outdoor Nation is holding its big kickoff event this month in New York Central Park. For more information and to join Outdoor Nation, it's free. Go to boyslife.org/links/Outdoor Nation. Well, our next article will go to the Martian Cable. That's on pages 36 to 38. And here it has a picture of someone with a helmet on, and he looks almost like a Martian. The Martian Cable Car. Stranded in the middle of the big, empty, suspended in darkness and out of reach of any rescue vehicle, what's a young Martian to do? There's a canyon across the middle of Mars, so big it looks like someone took an axe to the planet. It's called Valles Marineris. It's more than 2,500 miles long, 375 miles wide, and 5 miles deep. It's not a place where you want to get stuck. Trust me, when you see Valles Marineris from space, it's scary, and you can only see it from space. When you're on the rust-colored surface of Mars and stand on the edge of Valles Marineris, the other side of the canyon is under the horizon, beneath the curve of the planet. It's like being high up a mountain looking across a vast, empty desert. Tourists call the Grand Valley, most of us who live here just call it the Big Empty. Martians, that's what we like to call ourselves, don't build roads or lay train tracks. It's too expensive. And we don't like to waste fuel flying our Mars shuttles unless we have to get someplace in a hurry. Even though we use a lot less fuel than Mars, much lower gravity, it's still pricey. So we use spider trucks that pick their way across the uneven landscape and cable cars to ship cargo along the distances. Because Mars has less than half the gravity of Earth, we only have to put up a tower every few miles and just string some line. Yeah, it sounds old-fashioned to use cable cars, but it's cheap, it's fast, and it works. We can send people and supplies and machinery all over Mars without having to worry about the planet's impossible geography. And we've only had one crash, the one I caused, sort of, except I meant to do it. We were testing the new cable car line across the widest part of the Grand Valley, 375 miles. Mom designed the line. I've been her assistant for 3 years. I haven't finished high school yet, but that's how it works on Mars. You go to work as soon as you're tall enough to reach a keyboard, and you finish your education along the way. It's because there's too much work and not enough colonists. Not yet. Even though all the computer simulations said the new cable car line was safe, Mom insisted on testing it herself. That's how we all ended up on the first trip across the Big Empty. Me and Mom and my little brother, Bobby, we'd ridden the cable cars all over Mars. The main difference here was that the cabin was a lot bigger and a lot more comfortable. You don't need to wear your Mars suit. There were 2 levels, a galley, bunks for naps, and an observation dome at each end, because the trip to the station on the opposite side would last almost 8 hours. The trip is like flying a Mars shuttle, only slower and a lot quieter. And a cable car doesn't take off. It just rolls out of the station, and the rocky red ground starts falling away and away and away and away, and still so far below, it's just a rusty blur. The Martian sky is dark, almost like twilight, and the horizon is close, much closer than on Earth. Eventually, we're as high off the ground as an airplane gets on Earth, even higher, 6 or 7 miles. And then after a while, we start getting lower and lower. That's because the cable sags in the middle. Do the math. It's 375 miles long. Despite the fact that Mars has only 38% of the Earth's gravity, and the cable is made of super lightweight braided nanotubes, it's still a lot of weight. It sags. The car goes down, then it starts back up again. Except this time it didn't. After 3.5 hours of snacks and video games, we rolled to a stop in the midpoint of the line. The Martian night had already closed in around us. Above, the stars shone very bright. Mars doesn't have enough atmosphere to make the stars twinkle. Mom opened her phone and walked to the front of the cabin, talking softly. We weren't in trouble. Like any Martian travel pod, we had a 14-day survival capability. We could sit through a Martian sandstorm if we had to, although it might not be fun swinging back and forth for a week or two. But this was the critical weakness in a long-distance cable car. There isn't any way for a rescue vehicle to reach it quickly. Helicopters don't work in the thin atmosphere, and a VTOL jet might damage the cable or pod if it got too close. And if there was something wrong with the cable, you couldn't send another car down the line. Mom came back from her call and ordered us into our Mars suits. She came over to me and whispered, "Take care of Bobby." Then she went upstairs to the control deck. I'd helped Bobby into his Mars suit lots of times, but this was different. As soon as I started checking his suit seals, he figured it out. His face got all crumpled up, and he asked, "Are we going to crash?" "Nah," I said, but I haven't even convinced myself of that, so I sure didn't convince Bobby. He broke away and bounced up the steps to the upper deck. In the 0.38G of Martian gravity, that was only one bounce. I scrambled up after him. Mom had her head in a virtual reality helmet, her hands inside the remote control gloves. She was working the external robot. I grabbed Bobby just before he have grabbed Mom and pulled her and her controls sideways. "Come here. Let me show you what Mom's really doing." I tried to drag him to the forward observation dome, but he just started screaming louder for Mom, fighting me as hard as he could. For a 4-year-old born on Mars, he had a lot more strength than he looked. "It's all right. Let him go," Mom said, taking off the helmet. She handed it to me and said, "I'll take care of Bobby, and you work the butt. You've done enough time in simulation. You know what to do. Bobby and I will sit here and watch. Okay, Bobby?" Bobby made happy noises of agreement, and I took the control seat. I fastened the safety harness, pulled the helmet on, and slipped my hands into the control sleeves. Almost immediately, I was looking through the eyes of the external robot, a spider-shaped thing. The cable car carried two of them, and I could switch back and forth if I needed to use both. "Go top," I told the bot, "up to the tractor." In the helmet, my point of view rose as the spider bot climbed up the motor unit above. Behind me, I could hear my little brother squirming. "Bobby," I said, "are you watching on the big screen? Can you see the bot? I'm making it do that." I manipulated one of the bot's arms and had it wave at the focusing camera. "Hey, Bobby." Then I turned my attention to the much more serious matter at hand. I kept up a steady commentary, as much for my own sake as his. Anything I couldn't explain easily, I made something up. Anything to keep him from being scared, and me too. We'd done this enough times in simulation, and twice unmanned, but actually riding it down, we're about to be the first. The robot focused its lights on the tractor module and the wires it hung from. There were 6 safety bolts connecting the tractor arm to the passenger pod. All of them had green running lights shining. The robot reached up a manipulator arm and methodically twisted each bolt 180 degrees counterclockwise. The running lights went red. "Mom," I asked, "you're doing fine. Go ahead. Disconnect," I ordered. The explosive bolt separated with a silent poof. The life pod was no longer connected to the tractor module. It seemed as if we hung for a half a heartbeat. Then we fell. The tractor unit yanked up into the darkness above. Bobby screamed. I think Mom gasped, too. Sudden weightlessness is always scary. On Mars, you fall a lot slower, but that's no comfort. It all adds up. You're still going to hit hard. Then, suddenly, we felt loud bangs and all around the bottom of the life pod. In a few seconds after that, we squashed down onto the into the giant airbag that had inflated to soften our landing. Above us, we could still see the bright lights of the tractor blazing down at us. We had fallen only a dozen meters. That's how low the cable sagged into the middle of the big empty. A few moments later, the passenger car unfolded its eight spider legs, lifted itself away from the deflating airbags, and began picking its way toward Robinson Station, 25 miles south. The cable car survival system had passed its final test. "Yay!" cried Bobby, undoing his safety belt and bouncing out of his seat. And as I pulled the control helmet off, he grabbed my arm and shouted happily, "That was fun! Let's do it again!" And, of course, it has a picture here of the cable car riding down the cables with Bobby, his brother, and Mom. All right. Let's go on to our next article. How about the wacky adventures of Pedro? That's on page 43. Well, here we have a picture, a couple of pictures of Pedro and two of his pals, and with the caption, "Pedro runs into some old pals." But wait, they found him. Mighty peculiar. What do they want? Pedro is perplexed. "The Zorgs! I haven't seen you guys in years!" "Good old Pedro. I'm still a great thinker, as always. Last time you wanted me to help you with your expensive big spaceships." Yes, but our need is simpler now, old great but old thinker." "Like what?" "Save our planet." And of course it has a picture here of Pedro being kind of surprised at that request. Okay, we'll find more about Pedro in our next article. Pee Wee Harris looks at backpacking. And that's right on the next page, page 44. Well, Pee Wee Harris backpacking. And it has pictures here of Pee Wee and three other gentlemen. And it starts with Pedro having a kind of puzzled look on his face. "Okay, is everyone ready to head out?" says one of the young men. "Roger, Westy." The other gentleman, "Let's go." "How about you, Pee-wee?" Pee-wee says, "Air." The other camper says, "What did you say?" Pee-wee says, "Cotton balls." Camper looks at him. Pee-wee says, "Pillow." He says, "What are you talking about?" Pee-wee, "Feather. Can you just tell me whether or not you're ready to go?" He also says, "Can somebody tell me what in the world he is doing?" Pee-wee says, "Marshmallow." "Oh, Westy, he's just doing what he does before every backpacking trip. Thinking light thoughts." Okay, Pedro thinks that. Pee-wee knows that the backpacking could be kind of heavy, so he's just thinking of all the things that make things light, like pillows, like air, like cotton balls, like marshmallows. Good thinking, Pee-wee. Let's turn right over to the next page, page 45, and find out about what's going on with Moses and Pharaoh in Bible stories. After the terrible plagues, Pharaoh let Israel go. But Pharaoh changed his mind, saying, "What have we done, letting our slaves go free?" So the Egyptians gave chase and caught up with Israel where they had made camp by the Red Sea. The people were terrified and cried out to the Lord and Moses. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the sea and divide the water." Moses stretched his hand out over the sea, and the Lord drove the sea back with a strong wind and turned it into dry land. The Israelites went through, and all Pharaoh's horses and chariots followed them into the sea. Moses again reached his hand over the sea, and the waters returned, drowning the chariots and riders of Pharaoh's army. Not one of them survived. And here it has a picture, and then with Moses saying, "Do not fear, stand firm and see the deliverance the Lord will bring you this day. He will fight for you, and these Egyptians will never be seen again." And this is from the book of Exodus, chapter 14. On page 46, Games Out of This World. Well, it's finally here, with about 90 levels. Super Mario Galaxy 2, Nintendo for Wii, is just as big as the first game. This time, Yoshi gets to help you out. He's an Olympian when it comes to jumping, at least compared to Mario, and he can grab things with his long tongue. Mario gets to ride Yoshi, too. In Tall Trunk Galaxy, Yoshi eats some blimp fruit and inflates into a blimp. In Hightail Falls Galaxy, Yoshi chops a dash pepper, turns red, and helps you run up walls. In Bowser Jr.'s Fearsome Fleet, you meet Malatoid, an evil robot with two mallets for fists. And in Bowser Jr.'s Fiery Flotilla, go head-to-head with the dragon-like worm you defeat with spin moves. One of the new tools is a big drill. Just shake the Wii remote to dig right through the planet if you need to. Say, find a special star that launches Mario to another celestial body. Use that drill to defeat bosses, too. And sometimes you'll find a whole new world underground. As you explore the planets, you'll find comet medals. Collect them and use them to unlock some tough new levels. The focus of Galaxy 2 is more on gameplay than on story, but you'll enjoy the game almost as much as the first one. So get ready for the wild frontiers of space. Visit boyslife.org for a full review. Now, page 49. We'll talk about read aloud from a book. Banned by the Books. And now we'll go to Think and Grin. But before that, why don't we go to something that talks about books? And that's right here on page 10. Dangerous Journey. Now, here it has a picture of different books. A Year Horse, Max Lader, Hunts the Cool, Goal, Smells Like Dog, and Windblown. Let's find out about some of these. Get Trendy. Max Lader's task is simple. Find the neatest stuff from Kings Bay and get all awesome job reviewing products for a new website. All he has to do is beat the coolest girl in school in Max Lader Hunts the Cool by Tristan Blanks. Simon & Schuster Children's Publishing, $15.99. Dangerous Journey. Riding horseback through mountains and deserts, past Indians and outlaws, Lou goes to an unexpected Wild West adventure to reclaim buried treasure in Year of the Horse by Eagle Scout Justin Allen. Canine Mystery. Doomed to a life of farming boredom, Homer Pudding's fortunes take a turn for the better when his uncle wills him an odd gift. Homer tries to sniff out answers in Smells Like Dog by Suzanne Sellers. Summer Score. Prep for World Cup with Goal by Mina Jabahairbin. A crew of South African buddies finds a treasured regulation soccer ball. When bullies interrupt their game, the friends are forced to fight for their prize. Candlewick Press, $16.99. And finally, flying high. Oliver is a failure when it comes to the town of Windblown's favorite pastime, flying kites. But an encounter with his hermit uncle takes him on a wild kiting adventure, traveling through different dimensions and saving the day in Windblown by Stephen Messer. These are all books that I'm sure you will enjoy reading. And I will end with Think and Grin, page 55 to 56. Banned by the boss. Think you make the boss laugh? We posted three jokes. Here's the first one, joke of the month. Here's a top-rated joke from boyslife.org. Don't like it? Submit your own at jokes tab, and don't forget to vote. A vulture boards an airplane carrying two dead raccoons. The flight attendant looks at him and says, I'm sorry, sir, only one carry-on per passenger. And that's from Chris M. Hannibal. Chris M. from Hannibal, Missouri. Peter, why was the circle so hot? Elaine, why? Peter, it was 360 degrees. And that's from Patrick Hoffman in Sedalia, Missouri. Warped Weissman wonders, how do you stay off the grass signs get here in the first place? And that's Jim Sylvester, Arlington, Texas. A book never written, Land of 10,000 Lakes by Minnesota, from Eric Logan in Raynham, Massachusetts. Police officer, why did you park here? Billy, the sign says, fine for parking. And that from Patrick Hoffman in Sedalia, Missouri. And Pedro's super pick, Kelby, why did the chicken cross the basketball court? Graham, beats me. Kelby, he heard the referee calling fouls. And that from Kelby Dye in Firth, Idaho. Tim Swifty, boy, this hot dog is delicious, Tom said frankly. That's from Jacob Crane in O'Fallon, Illinois. Ben, did you hear about the eyeglass maker who got caught in his machine? Henry, what happened? Ben, he made a spectacle of himself. That from Ben Ginsburg in Sylvania, Ohio. Alec, why are the elephants big and gray? John, tell me. Alec, if they were small and purple, they would just be grapes. And that from Alec Mehta in Dublin, Ohio. Definition, breakfast. What you do when the light suddenly turns red. That's from Nicholas Gant in South Range, Wisconsin. Brian, how does a princess find her way home? Sean, how? Brian, she follows the footprints. That's from Brian Treader in St. Louis, Missouri. Definition, information, the way military people march. Get it? Information, okay? Charles Starr in Gilbert, Arizona. Wyatt, how did the ocean say hello to the sun? Cody, I haven't a clue. Wyatt, it waved. Wyatt Props in Summerduck, Virginia. A book never written, Prehistoric Birds by Terry Dactyl. And that's from Joey Dickinson in Fort Myers, Florida. Warped Wiseman wonders, can you teach a new dog old tricks? Sean Holden from Concord, North Carolina. Joe, what's your cheerleader's favorite drink? I don't know. Joe, root beer. From A.J. Penna in Laverne, California. Father, son, how are your history grades? Son, underwater. Father, what do you mean? Son, below sea level. That's from Ryan Kodahi in Brunswick, Ohio. And finally, Jason. Knock, knock. Jim, who's there? Jason, dozen. Jim, dozen who? Jason, doesn't anyone want to let me in? That's from Jason Monaco in Manville, Rhode Island. Well, we have run out of time for today's reading of Boy's Life. Sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. My name is John Ivey, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. So long until...